Inside of each one of these rooms, I used garbage. I used, for the interior design, everything that we have in there, almost everything that we have inside of the tents, were I found in junkyards. So all 24 rooms are different, of course, but we took those things that we found, old brass beds and the fabrics and so forth. Everything was recycled, but we put it together in such a way that it all looks great.
Welcome to the Design Pataki podcast, a show that deconstructs the Indian and international design world with leading industry experts. I'm Isha Gupta, the founder of Design Pataki. The confluence of luxury and sustainability with Bill Bensley, architect, interior designer, conservationist, explorer. To say that he's changing the landscape of hospitality design in Southeast Asia is no understatement. The trailblazing architect has a signature style splashed across more than 200 iconic hotels and resorts in 30 countries, ranging from the Four Seasons, the Ritz-Carlton, to the Hilton. While Bill's aesthetic could be identified as maximalist, whimsical, and exotic, the hallmark of his designs is sustainability. Bill is a pioneer of the luxury eco-tourism industry and a passionate humanitarian. His infectiously wacky style, daring standout pieces, and ability to design exquisitely immersive experiences have turned him into a veritable icon. Hi, Bill. We're honored to have you today as our guest, and I'm so happy to have this conversation with you, and you'll be kickstarting the Design Pataki podcast for us. So thank you so much.
Well, you're certainly welcome, Isha. Nice to meet you too.
And I have a lot of interesting questions lined up for you today, so I hope you're ready for those. I know you have this treasure trove of information inside you, so I'm going to try and pick at those one at a time.
Okay, sounds good. Good luck.
Okay, so then let's go. So first off, my first point would be, Bill, how do you define luxury? What is luxury to you?
Well, I think luxury is dead.
I've heard that one from you before.
And luxury is dead. That sounds very funny, but when I first started this practice, 35 years ago, luxury was a big deal. It was all about luxury brands, and the things that we spend more money on tend to be more luxurious in our minds. And that's not necessarily true. I think that the travel industry is very much shifting towards experiential travel as opposed to luxurious travel. And shifting now from experiential travel, which was very hot some 5 years ago, and now to sustainable travel. And not only sustainable environmentally, but sustainable as far as socially as well. So where are the places that I choose to go on my vacation? Where are the places that will benefit the places that I go to? That's something that's very important in people's minds now. So what's the definition of luxury? For me, this may sound really funny, but it's about being able to be take a bath in nature, in the forest, to do whatever I like to do in the forest, in the wilderness, in perfect privacy. That to me is the most luxurious thing in my life. Sounds funny, eh?
And no, it doesn't sound funny. I'm very, I think it's brilliant, and I would love to. And I know you've done that with Chintamani Wild, but we'll come back to that later.
Okay.
Yeah. How would you define sustainability? For you, what is sustainable? What is a sustainable experience? How does one pick up on those nuances?
Mm-hmm. I think sustainability is a big word that is scary for a lot of people. And sometimes for developers, it means extra expense. Oh, no. But sustainability is something that I grew up with since I was very little. I grew up on a farm in California. And we were completely self-sufficient. We had bees and chickens and ducks and rabbits and pigs and quail and vegetable gardens and flower gardens and orange orchard, apricot orchard. So we grew in mushrooms. We grew everything that we needed to grow. We grew up in a household that produced so much within a very small farm that we would give it to our neighbors. So that becomes second nature to me. So I think that's why I have become sort of a spokesman for sustainability, or say self-sustainability, within the hotel industry.
Right.
I want to give you an example of that. Some years ago, about 4 years ago now, we opened a hotel called Catitian Hill in St.
Right.
Kitts. And we opened that, and it sounds kind of sounds funny, with the world's first edible golf course. Because...
Oh, what do you mean by edible?
Everything on the golf course, all the trees, everything on the golf course, including the lawnmowers, were edible. So I had 22 different types of bananas. I have all of the trees were fruit bearing trees. Something like 16 different types of mangoes, and the lawnmowers. Guess what those were, Aisha?
Wow! So I'm guessing there's some sort of species of animals which eat up which.
They're the goats, right? Exactly, the goats.
There you go. I was like, there has to be one which sort of is...
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And we never used any pesticides. It was all organic, the first... And today, it's one of the most popular golf courses in the Caribbean. So that it's out-of-the-box thinking about how to create sustainability. Let's back up a little bit. There's a big problem in the Caribbean in that everything is imported. And that's a shame. I think, you know...
There's nothing local, yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing local. And since they stopped planting sugar cane about 20 years ago or 30 years ago, and there's such rich soils there, incredibly rich soils, but people don't know how to use their hands anymore to grow things. So that was one of our initiatives in this hotel called Catitian Hill, was that we brought in something like 400 different species of plants that produce food. And on every Saturday, we would open our nursery and give to the villagers. There's only something like 70,000 people that live on the island of St. Kitts, but we would give the villagers the cuttings that we had so that they could take a banana root, for example.
Oh, wow.
And plant their banana roots. So it was kind of like a Johnny Appleseed sort of idea, and that we would give for free within the community all of the things that we're growing on our golf course so that they could eat better and have better sustenance. And then today, when COVID, no tourists are coming, no tourists are giving them the tourist money, now they're surviving on all of those plants that we bought for the golf course some 5 years ago. Good story, eh?
That's incredible. I know you have these incredible stories, but backing up to, you know, one of the points that I'd like to highlight is that, like you said, everyone thinks sustainable is expensive and that, you know, your budget rises incredibly. So if you have goats, I mean, how expensive can goats be to like mow your lawn, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Let me clarify. What I said was that the things that are sustainable to developers are perceived as being more expensive than not. Than the original way. But in actuality, by my white paper says there's many different ways in order to save money and also be sustainable, which is an interest to developers. And I think there's no point in me being on a bandstand saying, hey, Mr. Developer, do it the sustainable way if it's going to cost more money. But I'm proving in my white paper all these different ways in order to be sustainable and save money in the long run. So it's a win-win situation.
No, I've read your white paper. In fact, I circulated it with all my friends in the industry and designers. They said, you have to read this. It's incredible. So for those listening, this is a white paper that Bill has learned building sustainable hotels in the past 30 years. It's a set of standards which can be slotted in any hotel company with existing standards so that hotel operators, owners, architects, and designers have a guide of how to integrate sustainability and hopefully make the world a better place through design. Am I right in saying that?
That's exactly right. Well spoken. Well said.
And how has the response been to the white paper? Because I believe you're open to collaborations as well in this, to add on and to create more ideas and sort of making a melting pot of how we can, you know, bring the voice to sustainability and make it a lot larger.
Downloads, we've had thousands of downloads. And I know for a fact that at least 10 different and sometimes major hotels have incorporated those standards verbatim into their building package. And I know that, I'm sure that it has influenced the rewriting of their own building standards. So I'm going to break my arm by patting myself on the back, but I think it's a damn good start.
Yeah, I think it's a great start. And honestly, the idea also is, how do you bring the two together? So how do we bring sustainability and luxury together? And I know, and I'd love for you to tell our listeners a few more examples of what you've done.
Sure. I think my favorite example of bringing luxury to sustainability is my own personal project called Chintamani Wild. And that mm-hmm. is in Cambodia, and it's in the southern part of Cambodia. And there is the Cardamom National Forest there. It's a huge mountain range. And I've purchased a logging and mining auction, I had the option to mine and log this land. I purchased a big piece of property, bigger than Central Park in New York. And in doing so, I become the person that takes care of it. What do we call that?
Right. A ranger of sorts?
Yeah.
Like a forest ranger of, yeah.
And by doing so, I have a moral obligation in myself to take care of this land. So I thought to myself, it's a beautiful piece of land. What we really need to do is, like Trump, put up a giant wall all the way around this and then let nature rewild itself. But since I'm not Trump and I'm not going to tax the Chinese or the Mexicans, what's the next best thing? So the next best thing is trying to police. Let me back up a bit. All of the national forest in all of Cambodia is under great pressure amongst loggers and then poachers of illegal wildlife. Already in Vietnam and Laos, all of the wildlife has been eaten. All of it. Their forests are dead. Cambodia still has a fair amount of diverse species, but it's because of a great company called Wildlife Alliance. They have something like 120 rangers that police and helicopters that police all of the national forest, and they enforce the rules and laws of Cambodia, which is not to do bad things. So
So
without building a wall, the best thing to do for me, because I'm a hotelier, is to build a very, very small camp with a very light footprint. Imagine the Central Park with only 15 tents built in right throughout the property, so that you have to hike for a couple of kilometers to get from tent A to tent B. And it's a neat place, and it all runs along river. But by doing this in a very luxurious way, and by very luxurious tents, which we sell per night for something like $2,500 a night, and it's doing really well even during COVID.
Oh, wow.
That produces enough cash in order to be able to pay for the policing of the army with AK-47s to police this greater property of the Southern National Forest. So once again, it's a win-win situation whereby luxury travel is supporting conservation. And I've gotten numerous awards for this idea and the implementation of it. So what do you think?
I think it's brilliant. Do you want to talk about how you entered the property as well?
It's such a big property. Once you drive, you can either drive from Sihanoukville or you can drive from Phnom Penh. Once you get to the southern portion of the property, you transfer over into a 1968 U.S. Army Jeep. We've refurbished all of these wonderful Jeeps, and we've got four of them. Of course, I've kept the roads to a minimum, so it's a single lane, and we haven't paved anything, or so you rattle down the road with potholes and et cetera. People love it, and then one Jeep takes you all of your baggage to your tent, and another Jeep takes you to a giant tower. And this tower, 10 stories high, 11 stories high, taking my guests up, and I say, okay, guys, let's get up that tower. And they look up at the tower and they look at it and say, oh shit, really? And you have to climb up these open stairs. And then from on the top of the tower, you can see 360 degree all of our property. And it goes from ridgeline to ridgeline to ridgeline. I can explain whether the edges of our property are and where the edges, where the edges dissipate and the deforestation starts again. So you're up at this very high, high portion, and you're also looking down to a stream down below, and you get on, you're fastened and you're given a safety instruction, and you're given a gin and tonic if you like to, just to calm your nerves. And you're strapped in, and we only do this during the daytime hours. And you're zipping through one of the longest zip lines in Southeast Asia. But the great part about it is that you zip right across this huge waterfall that's four stories high. And the water's gushing like a meter over the weir of the waterfall. You get to the other side, then you go through a series of rope bridges and such down the downstream, and then you zip back across the face of that same waterfall within the mist. And then you land, you take your second zip line across, and you land in the landing bar, and there's somebody there with your favorite beverage. That's how you enter the Shintamani Wild. And then from there, everyone is just so exhilarated.
You enter on a high, literally.
On a high, intended. Totally. Yeah. I designed this hotel about with all the things, all the bells and whistles that I love. When I go to a place, I like to be active from 6 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock at night, and I do every activity that they have. So we've designed this so that you have a 7-day activities menu. You can do as much as you want or as little as you want. If you want to sit in the spa all day, you can do that. If you want to sit in the bar all day and drink, it's all inclusive. But most people are very active. They go out foraging in the morning you can learn about how Cambodians eat from the forest, what they collect, and how to cook those things. And then you can also go out with our rangers with AK-47s and catch the thieves that are constantly coming onto the property, make arrests. So far we have seized, since the last 7 years, something like 795 chainsaws.
Wow.
You can imagine how much damage that does.
Wow.
Just this year, or just last year alone, we took down something like 3,000 wildlife traps. And so, we've collected something like 2,000 cubic meters of illegal wood. So it's a huge problem. India is much more organized, say, with their national parks.
Would you say that your philosophy is to spoil the guests without spoiling anything else?
That's a good way of putting it. I've never heard that before. That's very clever.
So, would you say that's a good mix of both, where you're giving this incredible experience, but at the same time sort of not ruining anything around the property or anything that you design?
I think that's very well put.
And because I was reading that, in Thailand, the Maya Bay, apparently they shut down the beach because they had so many tourists visiting the beach every day, and that they had to actually shut down the beach. So any such experiences that you've had, and what would you recommend also to hoteliers when they're planning, their concepts, or they're planning what the experiences should be for their guests?
Well, my experience is that when you respect Mother Nature and you build with a minimal intervention, i.e. you leave nature alone, or you build within the constraints of nature, then good things happen. So that would be my main source of advice. I'd like to tell you about my newest project that just opened in Ubud in Bali.
Right.
About 4 years ago, we started this project, and I was meant to be an Accor, 120-room Accor hotel in a small valley. And we were assigned to do the landscape architecture and the interior design. And we weren't doing the architecture, but we had this plan from a local architect, and it was 120 rooms that just went cascaded down into the valley and wiping everything out along the way with this huge concrete building, just decimated. And maybe if we were lucky, we could see a couple of trees on the other side of the valley. after working with this for about 6 months, I was scratching my head, saying, this is really not going to work very well. Went to the owner and said, Mr. Suito, who's a lovely fella, first time owner of a hotel company. And he said, yeah, what's on your mind? And I said, you know, Suito, this is going to really spoil, you know, this beautiful valley that you've purchased here. Cause we had it, everything was all staked out and bamboo and I could see very well what was going to happen. And he said, what do you got in mind? I said, well, why don't we do something like we did years ago, Four Seasons Tented Camp in Chiang Rai, which won numerous awards and such. Let's do something really light and so that just tiptoes on the forest floor and doesn't destroy it. And he says, yeah, okay, that's cool. Long story short, we ended up spending a fraction of what he would have spent on that 120-room hotel. Instead of getting $60, $70 per night, now this Capella Ubud is getting $850 per night. It's the highest rate in all of Bali. It's only 24 rooms. There's not one tree that was cut down. It has no walls. It's only canvas, no walls, no televisions, no room service. It's the highest rate in Bali. And for the first time hotelier, Mr. Suito, two months ago, was awarded by Travel and Leisure the best hotel in the world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a huge turnaround from going from this mass hotel to this exquisite Bill Bensley signature property. That's incredible.
And so he spent much less money than he was originally wanting. And so that means, Mr. Developer, you don't always have to have 60 rooms in order to make a profit. We've built 24 rooms there, and our profitability is incredible. We're doing really, really well. And because of our lower investment and also our high room costs. So my point is that if you can do something that's unique and pushes the boundary, then do it. And by the way, Shaz, that inside of each one of these rooms, I used garbage. I used, for the interior design, everything that we have in there, almost everything that we have inside of the tents, were I found in junkyards. All 24 rooms are different, of course. But we took those things that we found, old brass beds and the fabrics and so forth. Everything was recycled, but we put it together in such a way that it all looks great. You know, and each different tent tells a story of a camp in the 18th century of what it would have been, what it may have looked like had the Dutch come in the 18th century. There's a big backstory. There's a lot of history behind it. That's what people really like too, is to know these backstories and things to learn something new about Bali, which is what it teaches. I'm a shopaholic.
I know. I've seen a video of you doing, I'm not sure where it was, but you took someone on a vintage run with you and you were picking up a whole bunch of things.
Oh.
And it was I don't know if you know which one I'm talking about, but it was incredible. It was so much fun because a lot of things you were just somehow putting together. And I believe you do hoard a lot of it as well.
Yes.
Yeah,
that was on the Discovery Channel, I think. A 13-episode series, a television series that I did called Designing Paradise. I think that's what you're thinking of, yeah?
Yeah, and it was incredible because you're like, listen, I'm going to use all of this later at some point of time, put it here or there, or I don't know how your process is or what triggers you to buy what. Let's understand that.
If I have never seen it before, I'll usually buy it. If I come across it, something that's completely unique and interesting, I'll buy it because there's always going to be a place for it. One of the best Marriotts in the world is in Phu Quoc, Vietnam. We've had lots of big Indian weddings there. That particular hotel was conceived as actually as a renovation of a very old university. So while most of the elements that were inside that university were all lost and gone, I had to go shopping for 2 years in order to pick up something like 4,500 unique items in order to be able to flesh out this idea that it was an old university. So it's a lot of work.
1 second. You shopped for 2 years for this? Two whole years?
Yes.
Okay, where are you shopping? Please enlighten us.
I was mostly shopping in England, believe it or not. Yeah, because there's these big fairs in England and to the north, like in Newark and Lincoln and so forth, that they're held four times a year. And something like 3,000 antique dealers come from all over Europe with their U-Haul trailers, with their pickups, with their big trucks, and they put it all out on their lawn in front of them. I get there at, say, 5 o'clock in the morning with a flashlight, and for 3 days, I do nothing but buy, and I've got this giant truck in the parking lot, and I've got two guys with me all the time, and I would call them up, okay, lot number 34, I just paid for it, it's there's two sofas. And they'll come and they'll take the sofas and put them back. And then, you know, then, so I've got the system down where I can do a container full of antique items in about a week. I can fill up a container. So, and that in Paris is great. South of France is wonderful. But it's all about just having the eye in order to be able in the foresight. So
the vision. Yeah,
the vision. So I strongly believe, Mr. Developer, don't rely on everything in your hotel as being brand new. You don't need it. We have enough things in this world. Let's recycle. Let's reuse. Let's refurbish. Use the things we already have. Stop manufacturing.
No, I completely agree with you. There's so much available, and I don't know how you do it. You do it with some crazy, like, finesse, and it doesn't look old. I've been to the Siam, which is breathtaking, absolutely. So what do you feel about COVID? Do you feel that, you know, we've regressed a bit with sustainability because of a use and throw attitude that, you know, and sanitization efforts that need to be made, as opposed to, or do you think it's put more of a spotlight to the cause?
For me, I think it's put more of a spotlight to the cause. And this is going to sound funny, but other than the horrible, you know, the deaths and so forth, the horrible aspect of COVID, I think COVID is for me changed my life for the better, in that last year before COVID, I flew 300 flight sectors.
Wow.
It's crazy.
That's every day. That's literally you on a flight every single day.
Every day. Sometimes I would take four flight sectors in one day. Sometimes I wouldn't fly for 4 days, but basically you're right. It's one flight per day. And that's ridiculous. That is absolutely just stupid. And this year, this past year, because I'm in my studio with my 120 great designers and so forth, and I'm concentrating on design, last year was our most successful year ever.
Because you're not getting over that jet lag and red eye.
Exactly. So am I going to go back to 300 flight sectors per year? Hell no. No way in hell. I mean, I can do that. It's about enjoying life. It's about enjoying clean air. It's the cleanest it's ever been here in Thailand. It's wonderful. I'm seeing my own backyard. I enjoy my own backyard. So I'm thankful for COVID for that.
That's great. And how do you think you're going to change things now moving forward, especially with design? Like, what were the new things you've come up with? And let's talk about the human zoo. I feel like that's something we can't not talk about.
The human zoo, that is perhaps the most influential project that we are doing now, is that has the ability to influence in a positive social and environmental way something like 10 million Chinese per year.
Wow.
Yeah, we've got this
huge... That's a big number.
Yeah. We've got this huge piece of land, and my clients some time ago said, Mr. Bill, can you build us a zoo? And not a fan of zoos, so sorry about that one. Then I thought, oh, shit, how can we manipulate this to benefit the environment and benefit my causes? And my causes, as I've just told you, are Shintamani Wild and to stop the poaching, because much of the animals that are poached in my property go to the tables of the rich and famous in Vietnam and China. And we also know just this last year that our civet cats have another form of COVID. So if you eat civet cats, which they're doing now, it has the potential of creating another form of COVID within humans. It's important for people to understand, not just the Chinese, but people all over the world, to understand that wildlife is not necessary, is not a necessary part of our diet. In fact, it's a dangerous part of our diet. So back to China, we've got this huge piece of land. I said, no, I'm not going to do a zoo. Let's do a place where animals that are mistreated in the zoos of China. And I went to see 17 different zoos, and some of them are real shit, I tell you, in China. They're mistreated and they're overcrowded and so forth. And the idea is to take a huge piece of land and let all the hoofed animals, no carnivores, all the hoofed animals run in big packs and big herds throughout this property. Throughout the, on the edges of the property, to be able to do single loaded corridor hotels, of which Hilton, Waldorf Astoria, Hyatt, et cetera, there's seven different hotels. They've all said, yes, we want to be part of this. Around the periphery, every hotel room has a room inside the air conditioning area, but it also has a sleeping porch, which is a unique idea, so that you can hear the animals all night long if you like to. So there's a sleep porch. So every room has that. And then there's a train, the train that runs right throughout the entire property, stopping at seven different points. Now, these seven points then also have something like a Chinese version of a Broadway musical. And that's because that is the best way to get to the new population of China. Now, there's not just the one person, one child policy. You can have as many as you, two is okay. Like, so there's a big population by the time we're open that those kids are going to be 12, 13, very impressionable. So these Broadway musicals are oriented towards the kids, the Chinese kids. And that's how I want to make an impression on 10 million Chinese per year. What do you think?
I don't think it's going to be only 10 million Chinese kids. I think this is going to like set the bar so high in terms of experiences. When is this going to be opening up?
First phase is under construction now. So a first phase might be opening in 3.5 years. It's a big project. It's a huge.
Yeah, no, it's massive. It sounds incredible. Like the day it opens, I think everyone would just be like ecstatic.
Right. Yeah. I hope so.
You know, so what would your advice be in terms of small things that even a designer, like an interior designer, home designer, can keep in mind when designing a home? Because we know that there's a lot of, you know, waste that happens there. We're sourcing new, we're buying a lot of new materials. So what would be the small nuances that you've picked up, which you'd like to sort of, I know it's in your paper. I know that there's a lot of information there, but what would you share?
I think one of the easiest things to do at home is to reduce energy by way of cross ventilation. Use fans. Don't necessarily put on the air conditioning all the time. Open your windows. Use mosquito net screens and so forth. But to also, this is a big one, I think, and we've done this for all four of my Shintamani hotels, is we've eliminated single-use plastics.
Exactly.
It's not just about getting rid of the straw, but it's about, it's not just front of house. It's not just not giving the guests plastic toothbrushes, but it's about the supply line too. So Mr. Developer and person at home, if you can, and we did with our hotel, so I know it's possible for every hotel, eliminate plastics along the supply line. So tell your suppliers, here's my igloo case. Here's my igloo box. Put everything that I want in that, pack it with ice, and don't put any, even one square inch of plastic around it. I can deal with it without plastic. Then take, and I've got two lots of igloo boxes that we send out and we send back in with our suppliers, and this eliminates all plastics throughout the entire property.
Wow.
And if Hyatt, Hilton, all the big guys took that same approach with the supply line, that would reduce a massive amount of single-use plastics. And of course, bottling plants. And so use, if you can get water by way of glass, returnable glass in your own home, do that. Don't buy plastic bottles. Don't buy Fiji water from Fiji. That makes no sense at all. I mean, it's just, one, it's in a plastic bottle, but it's come all the way from friggin' Fiji, and it's just the same as distilled water in India.
No, we have that. We have this bad reputation for having bad quality water sometimes. So everyone's obsessed with using new bottles of water every time. So we've got the small PET bottles of water.
Mm-hmm.
the tiny ones. I cannot even tell you how many we go through in even in a home, not even just a hotel, even in a home or an event. So it's ridiculous. Though I've seen that at Chintamani, I've stayed there at the Angkor one, and you didn't have a toothbrush, you didn't have any of those things, nada.
No. You know, if you really need a toothbrush, call us up, we'll send you a wooden one. But yeah, there's ways around it.
And how do you engage a traveler or a consumer to be part of this sustainable journey? Like how are they made more aware, say in a hotel or in a property?
Well, we've got, I think over the last 7 or 10 years or so with Chintamani, we've become a industry leader in that, you know, along with Six Senses and such. But, and so we, how to say, many of our clients come to us and many of our guests come to us because of our attitudes towards the environment and our attitudes towards, the kind-heartedness towards the local people and trying to give each and every one of those people that we work with and also all kids from the villages to give them a better life. So people know that about us now. And so that's becoming a USP, a unique selling point for our hotel. So that's a good point to tell your developers in India, hey, make it known that you're helping the community. Make it known that you're what you're doing for the environment. Make it known that you're plastic free, because that will benefit you in the long term financially. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, perfectly. I think that's amazing to make a story out of it, to make an additive out of it. I think that's the only way to do it. So this has been enlightening, absolutely. Any last words you'd have which you'd want to sign off on about sustainability, luxury, and guilt-free luxury, as I'd like to put it?
Guilt-free luxury. I want to tell you just one more quick story. That it's a project that's on our boards right now. It's about, and I'm finding it very, very exciting. It's in Antigua. It's also part of the Caribbean. And we've been engaged to design a 60-room hotel there. Okay, great, 60-room hotel. What can we do to make it very unique? And so and they want to do something that's very, very, very upmarket, something like $3,000, $4,000 per night. So what we're doing is building 60 different bungalows, because I want it to feel as though this was all built between 1800 and 1900. So everything should be, and as we're doing, is using as much recycled material as possible, which is great. But the real kicker here that I want to tell you is that every single one of these 60 bungalows, it has a story about a local person.
Oh, wow.
If you go to the Caribbean, you know, you'll hear stories about Sir Lord Nelson and all the British, all the British la-di-da people that made slaves and out of all the people from Africa and so forth. But what we're doing there is we're celebrating the black people, the local people of Antigua. We're celebrating the Olympian bicyclist that came from there in the 1970-something Olympics. We're celebrating the lady that had a cooking show throughout the Caribbean who came from there. We're celebrating the artist Frank Walters, etc. So we found 60 different people throughout history and people that are still living there now. And the people of Antigua love it, because finally someone's understanding that there's beauty within our black community, right? They're saying, wow. So we're getting, you know, we're doing something about Frank Walters. So Frank Walters' sons came up to us and said, hey, you know, we've got these frames that, you know, that he did. And can you put those frames and that picture into, and we've got these sketches of it. So we're getting all of this really great things that normally I would have to shop for falling onto our doorstep and because they want to be part of this project, because it's all about them. It's not about Sir Lord Nelson.
That's brilliant. Yeah, no, I've been to those where, you know, you've had this old scripture about the place and some have fictional characters that they've made the whole story about. It literally that you know the people around you. Wow, that's incredible. I think we've left this at a real high, and that's such a unique idea, and trust you to come up with something like that. So thank you so much, Will, for being with us today. I've been waiting to talk to you, so I think this is meant to be. And I'm so happy you have time now, because I think previously, like you said, your schedule was out of control.
Wacky, crazy.
So I don't think you've had this much time to like actually chat with people and it's incredible. So I've had this moment with you and I'm so honored. So I'm going to thank everyone for tuning in today. This brings us to the end of the episode of Design Pataki podcast. I hope you've enjoyed today's conversation. We'll see you in 2 weeks with a new episode. And if you need anything else, log on to designpataki.com for more. And you'll find this video of me and Bill as well on it. So head over there. And thank you so much for joining us. All right.